The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
As to why for so many years we achieved so much, prospered as no other people on earth, it was because here in this land we unleashed the energy and individual genius of man to a greater extent than has ever been done before. Those who say that we're in a time when there are no heroes, they just don't know where to look. The sloping hills of Arlington National Cemetery, with its row upon row of simple white markers bearing crosses or stars of David, they add up to only a tiny fraction of the price that has been paid for our freedom. As for the enemies of freedom, those who are potential adversaries, they will be reminded that peace is the highest aspiration of the American people. We will negotiate for it, sacrifice for it. We will not surrender for it now or ever. We are Americans.
Welcome to Always Right Radio with Bob France on AM 1420, The Answer.
Alrighty then, we're still here. Friends, acknowledge this glory. We are still here.
You dig it.
We did not apocalypse. We did not rapture. We did not die. We did not end it all. We are still here. By the way, I saw the best thing in the world yesterday. Somebody said, you really want to have some fun, buy 100 blow-up dolls. Inflate them with helium and then let them all loose at the same time and watch people freak out thinking it's the rapture. That would have been something spectacular. We're still here on Tuesday, the ninth morning of the fourth month in the year of our Lord, 2024. And that is an outstanding development. It would have been considerably less desirable for us to not be here right now, but we are still here. And that means the work goes on. Hopefully you enjoyed it. I enjoyed it so much yesterday, I wanted to recreate it again and again and again. So what I did is I went online and I quickly purchased and had delivered and then installed on my wall an Eclipse switch. And it's so cool, when I flip the Eclipse switch into the up position, the sun is out, and then when I flip it into the down position, the sun goes dark. And then I can flip it back up 4 minutes later into the up position. It's a weird name. It didn't say Eclipse switch. It said light or something like that. Light switch or something. But it works. It's really cool. So I can relive the experience again and again and again. That is outstanding. All right, welcome. And yes, I'm going to continue to clown on this because I think it's clown-worthy a little bit anyway. But we got Peter Kirsten now. We'll ask him what he did during the few minutes of darkness yesterday, and then we'll talk to him about things that matter much, much, much more than that. That'll be coming up at 10:10. He is our only scheduled guest today, although we may have a call in from Jack Windsor at some point today to discuss a few issues, including, will Biden make it onto the ballot in the state of Ohio? I know it's a goofy-sounding question, but it's a real question. There are some issues with Biden actually qualifying for the ballot. So we may talk to Jack about that. If it's not today, it will be tomorrow. Okay, before we do anything else, we'll get into our top 9 and 9 here in a second. Let's go ahead and pledge allegiance to our flag. Patriots, stand and face your flag. Put your hand on your heart if you so desire. And don't forget to keep those flag pictures coming in. Send them to me at Twitter or Facebook, on my Twitter page at France Rants, FRANTZRANTZ, or on my Facebook page at Always Right Radio, and I will put them into the collection of the flags that you pledge to every day. I started out by wanting the car ones, but now some people are sending me the flags that are in their front yards or on their houses or wherever it is that you have them. I don't care. If you pledge to it when we do this in the morning, it's awesome. So send me any pictures you have of what you pledge to each and every morning. If you are a Marxist leftist who doesn't give a rip about this country, then don't fake it. Just acknowledge who you are by taking a knee, like a good little Marxist that you might be. For the rest of us, however,
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Alright, cursing out top of the next hour, this at the top of this hour.
It's 9 o'clock. Do you know where your headlines are? We do. It's time for the Top 9 at 9 on Always Right Radio.
Alright, let's get after it.
Number 1.
It was light yesterday, and I was going to mow my lawn. Then it got dark, so I couldn't mow my lawn. After a few minutes, it got light again, so I mowed my lawn. And apparently the people in my neighborhood loved the job I did on my lawn because they all sat outside in their driveways and watched me. Thank you, everyone. Thank you. I will give an encore performance next week at about the same time when my lawn is longer again. Hopefully without the darkness interruption.
Number 2.
Speaking of the solar eclipse that I'm having a little bit of fun with right now, the loudest shrew on a show full of shrews called The View, Sonny Hostin, watched the light turn to dark and the dark turn back to light, and then an earthquake, when added to an earthquake that happened in New York and the return of the cicadas, she declared all of this to be climate change. And the hilarious part was listening to the other idiots try to educate this particular idiot.
Although I love the first time in like
two different kinds of cicadas
are coming.
The good cicadas types, and the bad cicadas.
But for the first time in many, many years.
No, every 17 years this happens.
Well, that's not what I read, but maybe, you know better.
I would say
all those things together. What maybe lead one to believe that, either climate change exists,
that's more
or something
point.
Is really
the
Earth is returning.
Earthquakes are not at the mercy of climate change. It's underground.
It happens.
And the
eclipse, they've known about the eclipse coming because eclipses happen, and they actually can say when these things are going to happen. So,
oh, it is just comedy gold. But the sad part is they don't realize that they're being funny. They don't realize how hilariously entertaining it is for idiots to lead other idiots in discussions. So, yeah, climate change is responsible for earthquakes, cicadas, and, yes, solar eclipses. And she said she read it. She read it. No, she didn't. There is nowhere ever that has published anything even close to that. No, she didn't. She's trying to advance her ideology, and she got caught being dumber than the other idiots. There you have it.
Number 3.
Hamas has, in an unsurprising development for the barbaric terrorists, rejected another ceasefire proposal. They refuse to lay down their arms or exchange innocent hostages for its members held by Israel. After rejecting multiple ceasefire proposals since December, Hamas again yesterday torpedoed the latest round of talks with Israel in Cairo, being mediated by the Egyptians, Qataris, and by CIA Director William Burns. Meanwhile, here in the U.S., the useful idiots sympathetic to Hamas's end goal of wiping out Israel continue chanting ceasefire now to allow the terrorists to reconstitute and someday launch another devastating attack, even as Hamas rejects each new ceasefire offer put before them. New reports have emerged that ceasefire offers are being rejected by Hamas because the terrorists are unable to locate 40 living hostages. What that means is that Hamas negotiators have reportedly told international mediators in Cairo that it can't release those 40 hostages in the humanitarian category, which means women and children and elderly, that were included in yesterday's ceasefire proposal. Because out of the 136 hostages that remain in the Gaza Strip, a significant number of them are now believed to be dead. I said this the other day. There are no more hostages. If any of them are alive, they are being tortured and suffering in extraordinary ways. We cannot wait for them to agree to release hostages that don't exist anymore, also that they can prolong their own existence. they need to increase fire now. Forget ceasefire. Increase fire now. End Hamas completely.
Number four.
The Vatican yesterday, stunning many people, myself included, declared that transgender... I got a call from Pastor Chris Long yesterday. Did you hear what the Vatican said? No, I didn't at that time. I have it now. Transgender surgeries, surrogacy, and gender theory are threats to human dignity. That breaks with the progressive approach to social issues that Pope Francis has adopted in recent years. In a 20-page document titled Infinite Dignity, the Vatican argues these practices are comparable to euthanasia or abortion as violations of God's plan for human life. The declaration, which has been 5 years in the making, I don't know why it took 5 years to write 20 pages, but here it is, was signed and approved by Pope Francis, who ordered it to be written and published. In the document, the Vatican Doctrine Office formally rejects gender theory and any attempt to change one's gender, while upholding the fact that men and women are biologically different. Ed Morrissey wrote about it this way: the Marxists also attempted to destroy the family in a number of ways. The Marxists did. Indoctrination and or removal of children, limiting the procreative freedom of families, and sometimes just simply murder and sterilization. The state was the family. It was not for nothing that Orwell used the term Big Brother in 1984 and explained it explicitly as a replacement for the normal human family. Today, those who wish to destroy the family are using sterilization again, only this time aimed at children under the Orwellian term, gender-affirming care. So great news. Pope Francis finally got one right, and I'm very, very glad to report that.
Number five.
The Supreme Court last year blocked the Biden administration's $430 billion student loan write-off. But who do those justices think they are anyway? King Joseph showed them yesterday by waving his royal scepter again and canceling debt for some 30 million borrowers. Yesterday, in announcing the plan, the president bragged about defying the Supreme Court, which told him he cannot do this.
Tens of millions of people's debt was literally about to get canceled. But then some of my Republican friends and elected officials and special interests sued us, and the Supreme Court blocked us. But that didn't stop us. No, I mean it sincerely. We continue to find alternatives past to reduce student debt payments.
He's literally bragging about the fact that the Supreme Court said you can't do it, and he said it didn't stop us. We're going to keep on doing it anyway. That's incredible. The administration is essentially turning college into an open-ended, taxpayer-financed entitlement by canceling loans on the installment plan. It even boasts that it has already approved $146 billion in student loan debt relief for 4 million of them through more than two dozen executive actions. A coalition of Republican-led states challenged the actions in court, setting up another legal showdown now that has direct implications on his reelection campaign. Why? How? Because he's obviously attempting to buy off voting blocks, including younger voters. The White House said that this new proposal would provide financial stability for roughly 70% of all federal student loan borrowers, the bulk of which are, drum roll please, Black and Latino. And the two minority demographics that are fleeing the Democrat Party in recent polling are, drum roll please, Black and Latino. Oh, and as a reminder, even Biden's closest allies, such as former Speaker Nancy Pelosi, say Biden simply cannot cancel student loans.
People think that the President of the United States has the power for debt forgiveness. He does not.
Remember that one? Yeah, I'm old enough to remember that one, but apparently Joe Biden did not get that message.
Number six.
The NAIA, which is different than the NCAA. They're both, obviously, college athletic associations. But NAIA is the National Association of Intercollegiate Athletics. They have banned transgender athletes from competing in women's sports as of Monday. The NAIA said it supports fair and safe competitions for all student athletes and that Title IX ensures there are separate and equal opportunities for female athletes. The organization laid out its participation rules with conditions. The NAIA becomes the first national college governing body to mandate athletes compete within their sex. and it was an overwhelming 25-0 vote. We believed our first responsibility was to create fairness and competition in the NAIA. We also think it aligns with the reasons Title IX was created. That is outstanding. NCAA, get off of your progressive butts and get the same thing done. The largest organization governing college athletics in the world is the NCAA. Take a lesson from the smaller NAIA. They got it right.
Number seven.
The nation saw job growth in March. You heard the president and the left flexing about that. But did you know that the majority of the jobs that were created went to foreigners? Yeah. Wage growth was contained to foreign workers. Wage growth was contained, rather. But job growth was expanded mostly to foreign workers. U.S. employers added a seasonally adjusted 303,000 jobs in March. Significantly more than the 200,000 that economists expected. The unemployment rates slipped to 3.8%. However, and this is the money line here, under Biden, job gains have largely gone to foreign-born workers, both legal and illegal.
Friday's jobs numbers could be revised down after that happened. 12 of the past 14 reports on Friday, the Bureau of Labor Statistics did report 303,000 workers were hired last month, but the job gains have largely gone to foreign-born workers, both legal and illegal immigrants. From February 2020 to this past March, the number of migrant workers grew to 3.4 million. While the number of U.S.-born workers declined by 78,000 over the same period.
I want you to hear that again. I'll say it this time, though. Since February of 2020 through March of this year, migrant workers have gained 3.4 million jobs. American workers have lost 78,000. The Biden economy is not working for American workers. It is working for foreign-born workers. Legal and, emphasis on this, illegal. That's Bidenomics.
Number eight.
San Francisco is attempting to control grocery stores now. A San Francisco lawmaker introduced a proposal that would require grocery stores to provide 6 months of notice before closing a store and to explore a replacement supermarket at the vacated location. A member of the San Francisco Board of Supervisors introduced what he calls the Grocery Protection Act, based on a proposal the board adopted in 1984. The store would be required to post notices also at all entries and exits as a means of informing customers and the general public. This, of course, is in response to stores that cannot stay open. They cannot stay open because in San Francisco is a lawless hellhole society in which crime is so rampant, people run and take what they want and leave and they can't be arrested. Why? Because of San Francisco and California policy that says you can shoplift up to $950 without being prosecuted. Go over $1,000 and now you're in trouble. But if you steal up to $950, you're good. You can't be prosecuted. Stores can't stay open that way. They're losing their hats. And so they are leaving. And now they're mad that they're leaving because there's no grocery stores in the communities for the people to shop at. How about putting notices on the doors that say, "Stop stealing stuff, you degenerate freaks"? I wonder if that might help a little bit.
Number nine.
And finally, enthusiasm for EV ownership is fading quickly. 7% of Americans, up from 4% a year ago, report they own an electric vehicle. So that's plus 3%. But that increase is matched by an equal decline in the percentage saying they are seriously considering buying one. That went down from 12% to 9%. Meanwhile, though, fewer Americans, 35%, down from 43% last year, say they might consider buying an EV in the future. Thus, even as some people have moved ahead with their intentions to buy an EV in the past year, public demand for them has shrunken, contracted, not expanded. The lukewarm feelings on EVs come as car makers and the Biden administration scale back their expectations on EVs. Several car manufacturers, including Ford, have delayed or changed their electric vehicle plans amid the lack of consumer excitement. The Biden administration's adjusted auto tailpipe emissions requirements through 2029, by the way, are expected to lower the number of strictly electric vehicles to be sold by 2032. In other words, replaced perhaps by hybrids. And there you have it.
This has been the Top 9 at 9 on Always Right Radio. AM 1420, The Answer.
There you go. Top 9 at 9 for a month, or for a Tuesday, rather. Don't forget, Tuesday is also Kersenau Day. He'll join us at the top of the next hour. And guess what that means? That means for the next half hour, it's your time to shine. You can respond to any of the stories you just heard in the top 9 at 9. I'm going to be asking a few questions about them myself after the bottom of the hour break, including what do you think of the Vatican finally stepping up and doing something right, and the progressive Pope actually deciding to honor Catholic teachings, Catholic doctrine, the Catholic Church. That's a glorious thing. So we can talk about that a little bit. Any of the stories you just heard are up for grabs, and we have a lot more for you, too. Stay here. It's Always Right Radio on AM 1420.
The Answer.
Alrighty then, it is 9:33. Appreciate you joining us this morning on AM 1420, The Answer. Don't forget, it's Kersenau Day. Pete will be with us. What did you think? You heard the top 9 and 9 with a lot of very important stories that we're working on and that we're discussing. Whatever your thoughts are, let's hear them at 216-901-0945 and 888-281-1110. I want to play that one from Nance again. The Democrats are in charge, and people want things to be done. The progressives want things to be done. It is amazing how much they change their tune. This is Nancy Pelosi saying the president cannot do this.
People think that the president of the United States has the power for debt forgiveness. He does not. He can postpone. He can delay. But he does not have that power. That has to be an act of Congress.
So she says he can't do it, and Joe Biden says, kiss my wrinkled, crummy-looking butt. I'm doing it anyway.
Tens of millions of people's debt was literally about to get canceled. But then some of my Republican friends and elected officials and special interests sued us, and the Supreme Court blocked us. But that didn't stop us. No, I mean it sincerely. We continue to find alternatives past to reduce student debt payments.
And meanwhile, other Democrats who just don't give a flying rip. I don't know why they were so afraid of Trump getting 3 Supreme Court appointments. They don't listen to the court anyway. Elizabeth Warren is celebrating the fact that Joe Biden flipped off the Supreme Court and said, too bad, I'm doing it anyway.
So this is just a hallelujah day. This is the day when Joe Biden announced, as you said, 30 million Americans are going to see either all or a chunk of their student loan debt wiped out. And it's been a long fight to get here, but he's doing it. And, you know, I want to tell the story because I think the story says a lot about Joe Biden, says a lot about his values. So back when he was first...
He's bragging about his values when he is defying... one-third of the United States federal government. We are a 3-branch, co-equal, separate and co-equal branches of a government, system of government. He is ignoring one of them, saying, I count more than you do. I'm waving the scepter. And they're bragging about his values. Wait, what?
Sworn in, one of the first things he wanted to do is figure out what he could do about student loan debt. Because, as you know, this is crushing millions of Americans. 40% of the people who have student loan debt do not have a college diploma. These are people who tried and...
These are freaking lazy, degenerate dropouts. These are people who were too undecided about what it means to grow up. And they said, I don't want to go adulting yet and getting a job and getting a paycheck. And having to pay bills and having to pay rent, I think I'll go crash at college for a couple of years. I'll play beer pong. I'll drink. I'll order Uber Eats with my student loan money. I won't do work. I'll eventually drop out and have no diploma. And I'll deal with it then. Joe Biden is saying, those poor kids. Those poor kids don't have diplomas, but yet they have all of this debt. We should forgive that debt. Meanwhile, hardworking kids who do have their blank together graduate high school and say, college is going to cost me X, and I'm going to have to pay back Y when you add the interest. I can't afford to do that. I don't want to do that. I'm going to get a job. I'm going to save up my money, and I'm going to start my own business. And I'm going to take out loans for that. Those loans don't get forgiven. Only the loans of the college flunkies who either literally flunk out or the ones who do graduate with worthless, useless, progressive degrees. gender studies. I mean, so many stories of people coming out of college saying, I can't get a job. I have a degree, but I can't get a job. It's because they get degrees in useless things. College is almost completely useless at this stage in the game, given its cost, the rate of inflation for college tuition. It quadrate, I don't know, 10, 20 times that of the rate of inflation for everything else. When you add up the cost of college and look at the potential return on the investment of college, it is almost virtually useless unless there is a professional degree that you are seeking to attain, which you have to go to college to, to practice medicine. You have to go to college to get certified to be an accountant if you're going to manage people's money, to practice law. I mean, unless there is a very specific type of thing for which you cannot make a living, but you know on the back end of it there is a job waiting for you that is going to be lucrative, college is almost useless. If you go to school and declare your major as undecided or undeclared, you shouldn't be in school. I'll figure it out when I get there. I just don't want to go get a job yet, and I don't want to join the military. I'm sorry. Let's listen to Elizabeth Warren prattle on some
more
here.
This is crushing millions of Americans. 40% of the people who have student loan debt do not have a college diploma. These are people who tried and didn't make it, or they were never in a four-year program to begin with. And here they are, no college diploma, but still struggling with student loan debt. We know this falls particularly hard on African Americans. We know it falls harder on women. So
there it is. There it is. Elizabeth Warren, Liawatha herself, or do you prefer Pocahontas? Elizabeth Warren saying it out loud. African Americans, women, Latinos, demographics, voting demographics that are fleeing the Democrat Party. For crying out loud, Charles Barkley and Stephen A. Smith, two black progressives, discussing politics in the middle of their sports show, talking about how neither one of them are supporting Biden again. The country is in terrible shape. The things that are being done. Crime, they're talking about crime. Look at The Rock. We played this for you too, Dwayne Johnson. He endorsed Joe Biden and Kamala Harris enthusiastically 4 years ago. Said, nope, not doing that again. Didn't say he's going to endorse Donald Trump either, but nope, not endorsing these two clowns. I mean, blacks are fleeing the Democrat Party. They're fleeing Joe Biden. And so what do they have to do? I read this for you before. The overwhelming majority of people that are going to benefit from this student loan relief are minorities. That makes this a straight-up vote purchase. There's just no other way to see it. There is no other way to say it. 70% of federal student loan borrowers, the bulk of which are black and Latino, will be getting this relief. So this is vote purchasing. And the fact that they're doing it now, they're doing it in, you know, the early spring of the election year with 6 months to go before the election. Of course, this is vote purchasing.
We've got a lot of people who are dealing with student loan debt.
How about those people, by the way? She said, you know, these people don't have diplomas, but yet they're left with crippling debt. What about the small business, the entrepreneur who takes out a big loan, hangs out a shingle, as it were, you know, opens up their own shop, and then the shop isn't productive. The shop isn't profitable. And I don't care if it's a restaurant, a donut shop, or if it's a small consulting office or whatever it is. Doesn't matter. Let's say you take out a business loan. And what is the number? I used to know this, that the number of, 75% or something like that of small businesses lose money in their first year. And many of them can't recover. They can't, you know, they've got loans that are starting to come due and they can't, they end up closing up. So now what do you have? You have people who closed up their businesses and they have all of this crippling debt because of the loan they took out. When are their loans being forgiven? Liz Warren is here talking about, well, these people took all this money out. They don't even have diplomas to show for it. What about people who don't have profit to show for their businesses they open and they've got debt? What about them? What protections do they have? Student loan forgiveness? You might file bankruptcy. Yeah, what does bankruptcy do to your credit and your ability to borrow in the future? How come the students don't have to file bankruptcy? How come the students who are leaving college, either with degrees or without degrees, with tons of debt, how come they don't have to file bankruptcy? and cripple their financial future. Nope, they just get Joe Biden purchasing their support and their loyalty and their votes in November, forgiving their debt for
them. Really struggling with it. So President Biden announces a plan. He's going to cancel student loan debt for tens of millions of Americans. What happens? Republicans showed their values. First thing they do is they sue the president and try to shut
them. You freaking fake Indian hack. Yes, we showed our values. We wanted him sued because our values are when you sign the dotted line and you borrow money, you commit to paying it back. No one, and I think this probably would have been shown on MSNBC if there was one. I don't think I've seen one video yet of a gun being held to the head of an 18-year-old signing a student loan contract. I'm looking for it. I've actually searched it a few times. I don't Google, but I go onto other search engines, and I've been looking for somewhere, you know, that somebody had a gun put to their head that made them sign this contract under duress, that they promised that they would return, repay the money, and they were doing so under duress. I haven't found it yet.
The whole thing down. Go to Texas, get a stay, and so it all shuts down. Goes all the way to the United States Supreme Court, and this extremist Supreme Court decides that the words waive or modify loan debt doesn't actually mean waive or modify. This is exactly
it's an extremist court that said people actually have to pay back their money and the president cannot unilaterally just forgive debt. It's an extremist court that said that. Right, Liz? Elizabeth Warren, allow me to introduce you to Nancy Pelosi. You've never met.
People think that the president of the United States has the power for debt forgiveness. He does not. He can postpone. He can delay. But he does not have that power. That has to be an act of Congress.
Yeah, don't let the facts get in the way of a good narrative and good virtue signaling and good straw man argument creating as well. It is simply ridiculous. It is not an activist court. It is the law. When you sign a contract and borrow money, I don't care if you borrow a truck, borrow money to buy a truck, if you borrow money to buy a house, if you borrow money to start a business, if you borrow money to go to school and get a degree. There comes a point where it's time to pay that money back. Everybody has to do it except for the students. Why? Because Joe Biden needs those young minority votes. That's the bottom line. It is all about the election. Nothing less, nothing more. Just like Hamas. Just like Israel. Just like the new policy. We're threatening Israel that if they don't change their battle plans, and by the way, I love the fact that one of the things that Biden and Tony Blinken, Secretary of State, one of the things that they said was they're warning Bibi Netanyahu that going into Rafah is a bad idea, and if you don't do something else other than that, it could lead to a change in our policy. In other words, we're not going to support you anymore in your battle against Israel. Netanyahu responded to that with this story. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said Monday his government has a set date now to begin operations in Rafah. In a video message, Netanyahu reiterated his commitment to continuing Israel's fight to eliminate Hamas and said there is a date for an IDF operation to neutralize terrorists in Rafah. Today, I received a detailed report on the talks in Cairo. We are working all the time to achieve our goals, primarily the release of all of our hostages. Again, they're not there. And achieving a complete victory over Hamas. The victory requires entry into Rafah and the elimination of the terrorist battalions there. It will happen. There is a date. So good for you, Mr. Prime Minister. Do not let the anti-Semitic progressive left in the United States deter you from doing what you need to do to ensure the survival of your people. He, Biden, is solely concerned. Again, I hate to keep being redundant about this, but there's just no other way to tell the truth here. Biden needs those young black votes, so he's forgiving their student loans. Biden also needs Muslim American votes, so he's turning his back on Israel. He needs the Dearborn Muslims and Arab Americans in Michigan, a state he has to win an electoral victory. He needs them to come out enthusiastically in support of him. And instead, they're chanting yesterday, death to America, or over the weekend, death to America, death to Israel. And they're livid that Joe Biden is even giving Israel even a cursory amount of support right now. So he cares more about getting their votes, getting young people's votes, getting young black and Hispanic votes, forgiving their student loan debt when it didn't work out for them, than he cares about anything else. It's all about victory, which, by the way, brings me to a story I did not discuss in the top 9 and 9, but it might be the most important story of the day. It has been described by pollster Scott Rasmussen as, quote, the most terrifying poll result I've ever seen. It was a simple survey that he put to the field covering an issue that has been an ongoing subject of hot debate since at least 2020, when Joe Biden and his minions stole an election through fraud. Fraud at the very least, but it truly wasn't just a few questions. It was the theft of an election through multiple forms of fraud in terms of mail-in balloting, ballot harvesting, ballot drop boxes. It was as bad as it ever gets. So Rasmussen asked voters if they would rather have their candidate lose an election by playing fair or win an election by cheating. Overall, the good news is that only 7% of the respondents said they would rather win by cheating. That's a good thing. However, when you dig into the crosstabs and look at the demographics, a frightening reality emerges. Those who counted themselves in the top 1% of earners, in other words, the elites, they demonstrated a much higher willingness to cheat rather than lose a race fair and square. The group of people comprise some of the largest political donors, and they overwhelmingly vote Democrat. Rasmussen's question was, would you rather have your candidate win by cheating or lose by playing fair? More than a third of the elite 1% said they would condone cheating, and the overwhelming number of them vote Democrat. This should surprise absolutely no one. The prospective cheaters earn more than $150,000 a year, and they primarily live in larger urban areas. Unlike most of the rest of the country, more than one-third of them were okay with election fraud if it delivered a victory for their party. Among those who self-identified as being politically obsessed, meaning they talk about politics on an almost daily basis, a person like me, maybe a person like you. If you listen to me on a regular basis, or listen to any of the Salem shows on a regular basis, you're probably in the category of politically obsessed. And good for you. You care about your country and its leadership, right? You care about democracy. 69% of those individuals say they would be okay with cheating in an election. That wasn't the end of the bad news when it came to the elites. More than half said there is, quote, too much individual freedom in America. Let me say that again. We have too much individual freedom in America. You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of Arnold, the Terminator, who said, screw your freedoms during COVID. Remember that? Except I think he said the F word, blank your freedoms. More than half of the political elites say we have too much individual freedom here. The government should run more. More than two-thirds of them, so that's over 66% of them, said they are in favor of rationing energy and food to the people to combat climate change. Of course, these are the people, by the way, who would still be able to afford to eat whatever they want. They wouldn't accept said rationing. They would use their massive resources and buy more. The same two-thirds margin said they would prefer teachers and education officials to determine what is taught to children rather than their parents. Are you starting to piece these things together here, all of the things that I'm listing for you as a result of this survey? Far-left progressive rich people, Democrat voters, want less freedom. They want the state to run your children's lives. They want to limit how much food you can get and how much energy you can use, and they want to be able to cheat in order to win elections to make sure that you don't ever rise above your station. That's a summary. Hotair.com, Jazz Shaw wrote in response to this, I would recall these results shocking if we didn't already know that there were people like this out there. Look no further than the latest results of the latest Bridgeport, Connecticut mayoral election. Elections, plural, because they had to redo them because of widespread voter fraud. It almost certainly is not the wealthy themselves stuffing the ballot boxes and filling out the fraudulent registrations, but their wealth would allow them to enlist the help of others who would do that dirty work. If you think that these sorts of attacks on the electoral system only happen in Bridgeport or upstate New York, New Orleans, you're fooling yourself. These are just the places where people managed to get caught. This survey is telling us something that we already knew, or at least we should have known. There's a certain percentage of the population that is willing to cheat during elections if it improves their party's chance of winning. And it's the easier you make it to cheat, the more likely it will be that someone will show up and try. Massive levels of mail-in voting and remote ballot drop boxes facilitate these kinds of efforts. Looking at the demographics in Rasmussen's poll, we probably shouldn't be surprised that the overwhelming majority of these types of voting reform efforts are seen in blue states. That's the reality. That's the truth. And I think everybody should reconcile with themselves the fact that we are not going to have a fair election in 6.5 months. They are almost stating it out loud. We're going to rig the election and we don't care as long as it keeps the orange man away from us all. We have all been talking about this, haven't we? We've all been talking about this for the last 2 years, at least, that what happened in 2020 cannot happen again. Whatever reforms need to be made, canceling drop boxes, canceling mail-in voting, requiring photo identification, all of those proposals to secure the electoral system have been met with cries of racism, attempts to disenfranchise minorities. It's harder for them to get identification. It's harder on them to make them go to the polls rather than mail in their ballots. All of this stuff has been, every single thing that they support and that we have said we are going to remove so we can have a free and fair election in 2024. I'm sorry, but forget about it. They're not going to allow it. They see, and I started talking about this ever so briefly yesterday with a caller. They see, excuse me, Donald Trump as the modern day Hitler. And their argument is, their rationale is, if we could have killed Hitler or stopped Hitler or whatever we had to do to make sure he didn't take power before he did what he did, wouldn't we all say, let's do that? They see Trump as Hitler. And so they're taking those steps right now. We'll cheat. We'll lie, we'll change the rules, we'll do whatever has to be done to stop the new Hitler. The sad part about it is, and I responded to Larry Elder because Larry wrote something about this on Twitter the other day. The sad part about this is they continue to call him Hitler as if, you know, he might do this and he might do that. He might do this and he might do that. These are all Hitlerian types of things that he could do. As if he was a new candidate, as if he was a new commodity, as if he was not an old, tried and tested president. He served 4 years. And I have asked every leftist that I know on the air and off the air and on social media to point to me the Hitler thing that he did in his first 4 years. I'm waiting. Point to me and show me something Hitlerian, if that can be a word, that he did. How can you sit here and call him Hitler and say we have to do whatever it takes, including lying, cheating, stealing, and maybe even something harsher to stop him? How can you claim he's going to be like Hitler when he served for 4 years and did nothing like that? They have no answers. None. None whatsoever. But that survey is very, very eye-opening. That is very, very devastating, quite frankly, for our prospects in 2024. We'll talk about that with Peter Kersenow, who's coming up after the top of the hour. Stay here, 216-90. I probably shouldn't give you the number now. Pete's coming on. I'll give you the number after that. We'll take calls after that. It's Always Right Radio on AM14.com.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny. We'll preserve for our children this, the last best hope of man on earth, or we'll sentence them to take the last step into 1,000 years of darkness. Darkness.
This is Always Right Radio on AM 1420. The Answer. With your host, Bob France.
All right, 7 minutes after 10 o'clock, and we do continue on this Tuesday morning, the ninth morning of the fourth month, year of our Lord 2024. It's a morning some people thought would never come. The apocalypse was supposed to happen yesterday for some. It did not. I think I know, by the way, why I am, a little bit less than enthusiastic, or I was a little bit less enthusiastic. I still have PTSD from the last eclipse, you know, the total one, because Bonnie Tyler wouldn't stop screaming. She's screaming at me, and I'm telling you, I'm still traumatized from 1983 when that song came out. Ish. She freaked me out, man. That's the only thing I think of when I think about eclipses, and she's yelling at me. I'm not all about eclipses of the heart or of the moon or of the sun or any other kind, for crying out loud. I wonder what Kersenau did. I bet Kersenau enjoyed the eclipse yesterday. Let's bring him on. Our good friend Peter Kersenau, member of the United States Commission on Civil Rights, Cleveland attorney, best-selling author, columnist, and I don't know what all he does. I can't keep them all straight, but I do know that he is outstanding. And he joins us on AM 1420, The Answer, for his Tuesday commentary. Peter, good morning.
Hey, Bob. The eclipse was, I will tell you, going in, as with almost everything else, I was underwhelmed. I wasn't, stirred up by the hype or anything of that nature. And I, to my surprise, it really lived up to the hype. I was really impressed with it. I was downtown, and, you know, a lot of people all over the country came downtown. I saw in my parking garage, license plates from all the way, I thought California, Oklahoma, Texas, all kinds of places. Places where there supposedly some of the eclipse supposedly occurred, but we had the full eclipse here. And, you're used to getting all kinds of hype from media sources, and it never lives up to it. And so I was not necessarily looking forward to anything spectacular, but it was spectacular. It really was. It was dark as could be in downtown Cleveland.
I'll give you some language there. I don't know that I will go with spectacular. It was cool. My wife and I sat in the driveway. I literally had started, the story I told at the top of the show is true. I was about to mow the lawn, and then it got too dark to mow the lawn, so I stopped. And I experienced the darkness. And we looked around, and we had our little glasses on. We looked up, and we saw it all coming, and it was cool. But, Peter, I'm watching TV coverage of this, and there were people crying. And there were people, and there were news anchors who were saying it was a very emotional scene. I mean, there were people who, I mean, they got T-shirts made up for these things, and they're like literally like overwhelmed with emotion over it. I'm thinking, look, it's a celestial event. It happens, and yeah, it's rare, and it's pretty cool that we got to see it. And it's pretty cool that it was 3 o'clock in the afternoon and it went from light to dark. But 4 minutes later, the light came back out again, and then we got on with our lives. And I'm just wondering how many people are going to be dragging this along with them as if it was the experience of a lifetime. I think that goes a little too far myself.
Well, I think you're really understating it, Bob, because it caused earthquakes, and also I noticed some climate change during the course of the eclipse. It was really something.
You heard Sunny too, huh?
Yeah, well, I didn't hear her, but I heard of her. I was listening to some radio program. I can't remember what it was when I was driving. And, of course, nothing astonishes us anymore when it comes from those folks. But that one was pretty good. I have to admit, she exceeded herself. But
well, I'll finish it up.
I was very impressed. I mean, I understand what you're saying, but very few things impressed me, but I was impressed by it. It was, I was down in downtown Cleveland. There were thousands of people down here, and people were cheering when it happened. I'm not one of those who's going to go cheering, but I could see, I kind of threw myself back and was wondering, what if I was like in the Middle Ages or even prehistoric? It'd be one of those things where I'd be sacrificing virgins, probably. It was pretty impressive.
Well, they did that. They did that in many of those ancient cultures. Waters was talking about that last night, all of the things that they did, in response to those kinds of things that they couldn't explain at the time. So, but anyway, back to Sonny Hostin on The View yesterday, Pete. I'll play it here for you. I played it in my top 9 at 9, and the funniest part about it isn't her idiocy and trying to blame. She tries to link three things together. She tries to link the eclipse, a 4-point-something earthquake in New York that happened, and the return of the cicadas. She tried to link them all to climate change, and I don't know if that part is funnier, Peter, or if it's funnier watching the other idiots try to explain to that idiot how idiotic she is on this subject. Listen.
This is for the first time in,
two different times
are coming.
The good cicadas and the bad cicadas.
But for the first time in many, many years.
No, every 17 years this happens.
Well, that's not what I read, but maybe, you know better. All those things together would maybe lead one to believe that, either climate change exists.
That's more
or something
point.
Is really
or the Earth is returning. Earthquakes are not at the mercy of climate change. It's underground. No,
it happens. The eclipse, they've known about the eclipse coming because eclipses happen, and they actually can say when these things are going to happen. So all these folks who are saying, it's a sign from God. God doesn't give you warning. Okay? You think he gave people at the Tower of Babel warning? Oh, I'm about to jack y'all up? No. God does stuff, and then you figure, oh, that's probably because I just...
I'll try to avoid, Peter, her attempt to try to explain the Bible or God's word, because, by the way, he did tell Sodom and Gomorrah what was coming if they didn't change their ways. But the fact that she's literally trying to make the argument for climate change and that the cicadas, which come back every 17 years, are coming back, and she's like, it's been the first time in many, many years. This isn't a sign of climate change. Earthquakes, Peter. Whoopi Goldberg had to say to her, no, that happens underground. The plates shift. It's an underground thing. It has nothing to do with the climate. And she said, but the planet is warmer. It's just impossible with these people sometimes.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I mean, when I listen to that, it reminds me of when my kids were little and they were hanging out with their friends and they try to explain to one another some really complex matter, something well beyond their ken. Actually, my kids did a better job than that, and so did their friends. But that's what it kind of sounded like. Little kids who really don't know what they're talking about, explaining things to somebody who makes an assertion that some of them dispute. But it is what it is, I will maintain it was a cool thing. I was downtown, and, it went, I didn't expect it to go completely dark. I thought it was going to get, very dark, but it was really dark out there. It was a lot of fun. It looks once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. It's nothing to, dwell upon, but it was a cool thing while it happened.
Yeah, while it had that was my whole point. And I acknowledged it. I said it was cool while it was happening, but then I started the lawnmower bay. When it got light again, I did my job. And today I'm not going to remember what I saw yesterday, and by next week no one will. All right, Peter Kirschnow, let's get down to some of the news of the
tens of millions of people's debt was literally about to get canceled. But then some of my Republican friends and elected officials and special interests sued us, and the Supreme Court blocked us. But that didn't stop us. No, I mean it sincerely. We continue to find alternatives past to reduce student debt payments.
Joe Biden is actually bragging about the fact that he defied the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court directly told him, you cannot do this. He said, too bad, we're doing it anyway. Yesterday was another announcement of some 30 million more borrowers are going to have their debts forgiven. And Peter, I'm blown away that he's being applauded for this, despite even Nancy Pelosi having said the president of the United States cannot do this. But they're celebrating it, and they're giving him high fives over this. And you say what?
I say even a tribunal far elevated, I mean, as elevated as Nancy Pelosi, maybe not as elevated. The Supreme Court said he can't do it on a specific issue. The Supreme Court said he can't do it. They keep prattling on about Trump and other things being threats to democracy, and yet he is in open defiance and proclaims that he is going to simply ignore a Supreme Court ruling, the clear law on this matter. He doesn't have the authority to do this as president. He can't simply wave a wand and do this kind of stuff. What about, I mean, there's all kinds of things associated with this, Bob. I'm sure at some point you may have touched upon it. But among other things, let's put aside the law, because these folks don't care about the law, even though they keep talking about the rule of law constantly with respect to Trump. They're the ones who are constantly violating the law and doing things that are just extraordinary to get their desired objective, which is get Trump, among other things. But consider the moral hazard that's involved here. When you start eliminating billions of dollars in loans, it's going to produce certain behaviors among people, and it's going to produce profligate and unfortunate behaviors where people will start taking out loans, not just student loans, but other loans. This is human nature. Anybody who's been on this earth for more than 14 seconds understands that when you incentivize this kind of behavior, you're going to get more of it. And so at some point, there are going to be loans that can't be forgiven. And we're going to have some type of, maybe not a major financial calamity, but there's going to be financial calamities. But beyond that, what kind of people are we that you take out a loan and you expect somebody else to pay for it? Especially, though, what about all those folks, my family, we saved, and my kids went to college and, all that stuff. We didn't take out any loans at all. We did what you were supposed to do. And that's, I'm not trying to say that's, something. I understand in today's environment, most people need to take out loans, unfortunately, because that's another whole issue we need to talk about. But all the folks who responsibly took out loans, paid them back on time, sacrificed to do so, and all those folks who didn't take out loans, who didn't go to college, or who are producing, things much more productive than your average theater arts major, no disrespect to them, you got carpenters, welders, so on and so forth, that are now paying back the student loans. But let's go to theater art majors. Carpenters, construction workers, plumbers, and all kinds of other folks who are paying back the student loans of theater arts majors who don't have jobs. That is just awful. That's horrible. And we're not talking about a few people like this. We're talking about millions of people. The moral hazard is one that's going to be perpetuated for the next several decades. And on top of all that, did anybody notice in the Biden administration that we're some $30 trillion in debt? How do we do these things? At some point, you have to say no mas. That point, frankly, between you and me, probably passed about two decades ago. But here we are now where it's unsustainable, literally unsustainable, and this guy's waving wands around in order to buy votes, literally buy votes.
That's right.
We've been raising a couple of generations of Americans now who expect this kind of thing to happen. They expect something for nothing, and that is going to produce a calamity, financial or otherwise, in the very near future. If not in the very near future, it's going to happen. There's certain laws of physics that are going to transpire that you can't avoid.
Yeah, well, one would think so. I'm just blown away by the fact that the Supreme Court is being treated like they're just merely people who give suggestions, not rulings or court orders, as if we were not a three-tiered system of justice, or not three-tiered, beg your pardon, three branches of government, which are all equal. As if I'm more important than you, and I don't think that he is. And again, here, because I brought it up for you, Pete, I'll play it.
People think that the President of the United States has the power for debt forgiveness. He does not. He can postpone, he can delay, but he does not have that power. That has to be an act of Congress.
And this was in July of 2021 that statement mm-hmm. was made by Nancy Pelosi. So it is very clear. So my question to you is now, with the current Speaker, Mike Johnson, and Republicans in very, 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 very tenuous control of the House right now, is there anything they can do to undo these orders?
I'm not sure they can. Among other things, they've got the power of the purse. I don't know the internal machinations that they could implement in order to prevent this from happening. I suspect that somehow, I don't know how Biden is going to be implementing this thing, so I'd have to see what he's doing there in order to determine whether or not the Congress could do something. I suspect Congress could do something about it in terms of the purse strings, but remember, the spending power, Congress has to appropriate, and then the president and the executive branch has to implement. As you said, we have three branches of government. I don't know what he can do, but he better try to do something, because there is a significant cohort of Americans here who are incensed by this. I'm one of them. But more importantly, it's the framework of our government. If you start doing things like this, if you can simply ignore the strictures that are placed upon you by the law, the rule of law, and start spending money on all manner of things, we don't have a democratic republic anymore. We've got a dictatorship. Again, from these folks who keep talking about threats to democracy, they're the ones who are violating it constantly. As many people have said, when you want to know what the Democrats are up to, listen to what they're calling their opponents. And that's precisely what they're doing.
Yeah, that's exactly right, Peter. Let's take a time out here. It's 10:21, so we can pivot to a couple of other topics. We have a few things we're going to talk about with Peter Kirsch now, including Chris Quinn, the editor of the Cleveland Plain Dealer, flexing on his I Hate and We Hate Trump column by saying people loved it. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about minimum wages. We're going to talk about China buying up all of our farmland. And we're going to be talking about death to America being chanted on American soil. So we have a lot of work to do with Kirsten now. Stay here and always
click the banner at DennisPrager.com.
Okay, 24 minutes past the hour. Let's dive back into it with Peter Kirsten. Now, Pete, about 2 weeks ago, you and I discussed the article in the Cleveland Plain Dealer, which was a rare admission by a left-wing rag that they are indeed a left-wing rag. They announced by way of an op-ed by Chris Quinn, the editor, that we hate Trump, and we will not give Trump fair coverage. No matter what any of his followers want us to do, we are going to treat him differently than anybody else that we have ever treated because we hate him that much, and he is Hitler. And I'm not paraphrasing that, really. That's literally what they said. We will not give him fair coverage. Forget about it. Well, you and I complained about it. Many others did. But now, as of 3 days ago, Chris Quinn has published the follow-up saying, ha ha, everybody loves what we did, so we're going to keep on doing it. Quote, I've received more than 2,700 emails and counting, more than 90% of them offering thanks and kudos. They love what people love what they're doing to Donald Trump here. This is supposed to be the free press, and I get it. It is that we have a free press, but I thought the press's job was to give fair and impartial information to let the people decide about issues like this. What do you say?
I think what's amazing to me is that he's telegraphing the reasons for their decline. He's telling people. I mean, this is one of the most amazing anti-marketing issues imaginable, that he's telling people we're not a reliable, unbiased source. If you want propaganda, come to us. And that is a diminishing market. After a while, people are, even those who can't stand Trump, are going to be looking to other sources for true news and not propaganda. So from just a management standpoint, that's baffling to me. But among other things, there's some self-reflection that's completely absent here. They keep saying, in this article, he says, words to the effect that Trump wants to, you know, create a Nazi-like regime and they're a threat to democracy. Again, this guy's been was president for 4 years. We have a record. Where was this? I keep asking people who say these things, give me an example, and they never can. But they must have missed the part, or he has must have missed the part, where the Democrats were trying to keep the person that more than half of America wants to be president of the United States off the ballot. They try to do that. They engage in monumental lawfare in so many different democratic jurisdictions to keep them off the ballot. Talk about anti-democracy or threats to democracy. Talk about the fact that they completely miss the fact that this regime is spying, admits to spying on conservatives. They're arresting people for praying at peaceful rallies, at abortion clinics, and so on and so forth. That they don't arrest violent protesters in the George Floyd that created billions of dollars in damage. In fact, they have a vice president that encouraged it and threatened that there was going to be more of it. But that's not a problem. They sick the FBI on religious and spy on Catholics and say that Catholics, traditional Catholics, could be a threat. No problem with that. None whatsoever. This wasn't under Trump. Trump did none of these things. These are all under Biden. You know, they implement all these policies that almost guarantee election fraud. Again, doesn't that have something to do with democracy? That it goes on and on and on. They labeled virtually a third or more of our military personnel as possible threats to the United States. Incredible, you know, but no problems there, none whatsoever. You know, and then what about, I haven't read The Plain Dealer in a long time. When I have, I see certain things that astonish me. They mm-hmm. keep missing the boat constantly. I think they should, you know, really reflect and stress and concentrate on their primary objective, and that is objective reporting of the facts. because they have not been doing that, apparently, from what I can tell. At least he is telegraphing that they're not going to be doing that. So ask yourself, once Trump is gone, okay, once he's off the national scene, if he were to lose, for example, in November, which I don't think is going to happen, at that point, why would you go to the plain dealer after they've made this confession that they can't be trusted as a neutral source? Why go back to them? Again, simply from an economic perspective, it's stunning to me that they would confess something like this.
I have to inquire as to whether that was ever their primary objective, what you just said, the objective presentation of news for the people to decide and to absorb and figure out for themselves. I don't think that was that, because this didn't just start with Trump. If we think back, I mean, we don't have to, we can really, if you want to go back for a couple of decades or more, or three or four more, but just go back a couple of decades to George W. Bush. They treated him the same way. Maybe not quite as harsh. They certainly didn't admit it with an editorial the way they did with Trump, but they treated him. I don't know that the plain dealer, in my years of reading it, I don't know that that was ever their primary objective, Peter, to be literally objective rather than a partisan in their presentation of news.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Bob. And I think that most of us conservatives perceive that, and most media organs were like that, that they were biased. Most media organs, though, do not explicitly say that. And I think for those of us who watch the political scene, we know that. Most of your audience knows that. But there's a good 40-50% of Americans who are just kind of going through their lives, raising their kids and stuff like that, and they're not concentrating on whether or not the sources from which they get their news are actually unbiased. So when that very source confesses that they are biased, I think that's, you know, a revelation to at least a significant cohort of the American people, and that's going to hurt their marketplace dynamics, no doubt about it, and it's deserved.
It should. It absolutely should. But sadly, he's saying, nope, look at this. More people love us now than loved us before because they love the, you know, they feel like what we're doing is warranted here. This is the way.
Yeah, it's MSNBC and CNN and other places love them. Big surprise, right?
Yeah, exactly right. Okay, Pete, we have a lot more work to do. Stick with us on Always Right Radio.
And the answer.
All right, 10:34. We've got 26 minutes of Kersenow commentary still to come here. Peter Kersenow, I'm going to play it, then you react to it. This is the South Carolina head basketball coach on Saturday in Cleveland at the Final Four, one day before she played for the national championship.
One of the major issues facing women's sports right now is the debate, discussion topic about the inclusion of transgender athletes, biological males, in women's sports. I was wondering if you would tell me your position on that issue.
Damn, you got deep on me, then. I'm under the opinion of if you're a woman, you should play. If you consider yourself a woman, and you want to play sports, or vice versa, you should be able to play.
That was painful to watch. You're just listening to it. But Kersenow, what do you say? We have Pete.
You recognize she? Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, you weren't up. Sorry, go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, it was immediately apparent that, or it was apparent that she immediately recognized that she was in a trap. That she is a college basketball coach, meaning she's at a college. And so she's got to say certain things in order to keep her job, or at least to maintain her woke credentials among her friends. And so she paused, knowing what the truth is, that no, there's no way in the world somebody who claims to be a woman but is a man should be playing on a woman's basketball team. That's a no-brainer. There's no question about that. That's like saying, should you be looking at the eclipse without glasses or something? Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt whatsoever. But because she, like, you know, many people, I don't fault them too much, depending upon where they are. I mean, she just won a national championship, so you think she'd be insulated from a lot of the blowback that others might get if they don't say the politically correct thing. Yet she went along with it. Look, everybody knows that, among other things, Dawn Staley is politically correct on steroids. If not politically correct, I think she is beyond that. She is, you know, she was the person who continued to insist that a BYU fan had supposedly shouted, remember this, shouted some racial epithet at one of her players, despite the fact there was absolutely no evidence of that whatsoever. There were studies, reviews, investigations done of it, listened to transcripts. Nothing like that ever happened, but she continued to insist on it. And she's done other things that are similar to that. So it's not surprising that she would say something like this. But what it is it there's a real insanity that has descended upon America and, you know, much of the Western world over the last couple of decades. It's we can't even acknowledge that men are women, that men are not women and women are not men, and the two are separate, and that we have separate leagues for a reason. You know, I have not been successful, despite the fact over the last several years, I have requested that the Civil Rights Commission conduct hearings on this very topic, that is, transgenderism in sports. The progressives don't want to have a hearing on it. They assiduously, I mean, they vigorously oppose because they know they can't defend their position. They just hope it can, by virtue of political correctness and censorship, that they can continue to perpetuate this ridiculousness. They don't want to have an honest hearing on it because an honest hearing shows that there's no way in the world, despite, look, there are tremendous female athletes, but as Martina Navratilova, maybe the best female tennis player in history, says, there's no way. You can't compete. If you've been on this earth alive for maybe 5 minutes, you understand that there are profound physical differences between the two sexes, and you can't bridge them, no matter how you want to, you know, engage in some form of delusion about it. But nonetheless, this is where we are in America today.
How much
college? Go ahead.
How much, Pete, do you think it has to do with the fact that she's black? And as a black man, you can answer this better than I am. The marginalized communities are often lumped together as marginalized communities. She's a member of that. And so is the LGBTQ community. As she sat there and pondered and made faces and took a drink of water trying to figure out, what the hell do I say right now? If I say, of course men shouldn't be in our game, what are you kidding me? I'm going to anger and outrage the LGBTQ community, one that I'm supposed to be aligned with. I'm an ally of, because we are both, you know, put down upon by the straight white male patriarchy of this country. I wonder if her race didn't impact her decision on how to answer that at that time. And obviously, the fact that she is obviously a progressive person is not lost on me. Your BYU, I didn't remember that until you just brought it up, by the way. But that BYU, sir, she is a very progressive individual, mm-hmm. who is always, you know, looking at playing the victim card here. So she didn't want to anger others who play the victim card along with her. Am I crazy or?
Yeah, what I believe is that, her progressivism is what got her to this point. I don't think it has to do with being black or being female or anything else like that, because if you look at the data, for example, or you just talk to your average black people or females, they are not aligned with the transgender sports movement because of having, say, a history of quote-unquote marginalization. Maybe people are a little bit more sensitive and will think about the argument a little bit more, but this is one of those arguments where whether you're black, white, Asian, Hispanic, 2 + 2 is always going to equal 4. There's no argument about that. This is as clear cut as that. Men and women should be on different sports teams, just as 5-year-olds and 25-year-olds should be on different sports teams, just as a 98-pound wrestler should be in a different classification than a heavyweight wrestler. There are reasons why we have these demarcations. Survived the test of time. They're there for a reason. But we are in, as Robert Heinlein used to call it, the crazy years, where everything, every convention, every tradition, every norm is being thrown out, and we're going to be, and we are, suffering the consequences of it.
Yeah, there's no question about that. And a good answer. Like I said, I'm just trying to figure out how she... I feel like she was in a situation where she was... She felt trapped. She felt trapped into staying with the progressive thing. I mean, she didn't answer immediately. Of course, trans women are real women. They should be able to play. She had to ponder and think deeply about, how do I deal with this? What do I do? They got me here. And do I say what I don't believe, which is that yes, men should be able to play in women's sports, or do I stick to my my progressive guns here?
And Bob, I have, you know, I don't have a brief for Dawn Staley at all. She is a progressive. She's a successful basketball coach. I give her that. She
yeah. Oh gosh. amazing.
No doubt about that. Give her kudos. In a way, I actually kind of feel sorry for her, that you could tell she don't want to be in that position. And, yeah, she's going to say the progressive thing, you know. But my view is this, and I've been, and again, I may be in a different position than most people, but I think it's important when you can, you know, all of us need to sit down for a moment and do some self-reflection and ask ourselves, how are we going to respond in difficult circumstances? And I would hope that I think most of your listeners who I've met would respond the right way. But steel yourself to say the right thing no matter what the consequences. Now, for those of you who know that you're going to get fired from your job and you got kids to raise, I'm not advising you to do that. You've got to do what's necessary to protect your circumstances and your family.
Sure.
But if you're in a position where you can say it, you may harm your reputation. I think it's important to do so. For civilizational sanity, we need to do this kind of stuff. So I'm only going to speak for myself. Whenever I'm in an environment like that, and again, I'm in a much different position than 90% of your listeners. Whenever I'm in an environment like that, I've PO'd a lot of people. Before I had a little bit of a reputation, before I got into the Civil Rights Commission, everyone understood I was a right-wing crank in good standing. You know, I still would say things that got me into quote-unquote trouble. But what kind of trouble? I mean, not trouble like some of my relatives. I mean, I think very often of my brother-in-law who served in Vietnam very honorably. You know, you get shot at, you're face down in the mud. What is a little bit of public opprobrium compared to that? And that little bit of public opprobrium is necessary so we maintain civilizational sanity. It's important for our kids that we speak the truth. So, and I'm preaching to the choir here. I know your listening audience thinks the same way I do. If there's anybody on the bubble, I would just encourage them, speak your mind, speak your truth, not your truth, the truth.
The truth.
The
yeah.
right way. Yeah.
Yeah, very well said. Peter, let's move on here because this happened on American soil over the weekend.
We've been asked in the past, why are our protests on the International Day of Quds, why are they so anti-America? Why don't we just focus more on Israel and not talk so much about America? Gaza has shown the entire world why these protests are so anti-America. Because it's the United States government that provides the funds for all of the atrocities that we just heard about. And this is why Imam Khomeini, who declared the International Day of Quds, this is why he would say to pour all of your chants and all of your shouts upon the head of America.
Peter, this is Dearborn, Michigan. This is obviously a very, very large Muslim and Arab American community, and they all vote. And they said death to America yesterday, or excuse me, on, I guess it was, what was the day of Quds? Friday, I guess maybe it was. But at any rate, there is a lot of pushback. Even the White House criticized this, at least mildly. What do you say?
I say a couple things. First of all, my knee-jerk reaction, and it is a knee-jerk reaction, but I think it's the reaction of many of your listeners, many Americans who won't say it, is deport these clowns. If you don't like America, if you say death to America, get the heck out of America. I know that's not a very sophisticated sentiment. I know that, you know, I should be saying something that's, you know, far more erudite than that, but no. I love the United States of America, as do 98% of Americans, I think. Even some of the progressives love it, okay? But I think it's a qualification of being an American that you don't say death to America. In other words, if you're going to say death to America, go to wherever you think is better. But by the same token, I do think for all, I hope the Biden administration is listening, and I hope the FBI is listening. They still haven't arrested me yet, even though I'm pretty sure they're around the corner. But instead of targeting traditional Catholics and people who pray outside of abortion clinics, and a whole host of other good, solid Americans who've never committed a crime in their life, maybe you should vote your surveillance attention to these clowns. I'm hopeful that they have, because otherwise I'm really disappointed. I mean, I've been disappointed with the FBI for a long, long time. I've said so publicly. But this is unforgivable. You don't do this. You have a free speech right in America, right? That doesn't mean that you should and you can exercise it any way you want to. So I have a free speech right. So do the rest of Americans, and we should heap public opprobrium on these clowns big time. I'm not suggesting violence. I'm simply saying public opprobrium from the standpoint of denouncing this, condemning this, and telling these people what jackasses they are in much more cultural language than I just used.
Yeah, I agree. You know, the deportation part of this, Peter, Michael Savage said that on Sunday, and I retweeted it, and I said it on the show yesterday, too, and I agree with it, but many of these people are Americans. You know, there's nowhere to deport them, too, especially those who were born here. Yeah,
right. That's the gut reaction that you have. I'm not advocating this on a real-time basis. I'm not saying, you know, but everyone out there who hears this thinks just that, and that sentiment, I think, is justified. You know, if you're going to say these things about America, then what the heck are you doing here? There must be a better place for you to be. Now, that's like many of us are of an age where we remember the old phrase of America, love it or live it, leave it, during the Vietnam War and during those protests. And, you know, people who said those things were viewed as being retrograde Neanderthals. But the sentiment conveyed is, if you're an American, act like an American, appreciate this country, which is the most bountiful, free country in the world that was created at the sacrifice of so many patriots, the continued sacrifice of so many patriots, and you've got the audacity to sit up there and say death to America. Again, you've got a First Amendment right, but I also have a First Amendment right to condemn your butt as much as I want to.
Very well said. Peter Kersenow, let's move on. Speaking of death to America, there is another group, there is another group who might feel the exact same way. And in fact, they may be acting on and moving toward the goal of death to America. And I'm talking about the number of Chinese immigrants into this country, many of them illegal, that are buying up American farmland around a lot of strategic locations, including military bases. You wrote an article about this for National Review. What do you want to tell us?
Well, I'm very concerned about this, and I don't think there's sufficient alarm in the appropriate precincts about this. China has pretty much told us and told the world, not pretty much, they have said they want to supplant America and they'll do it by any means necessary. They really do. They are, do not have our interests at heart. And I've written several columns indicating that there are tens of thousands. When I started writing about this, nobody was even concerned about it. And now all of a sudden there's a plethora of articles about it. This is a no-brainer as far as I'm concerned. Tens of thousands of Chinese military age males have come here. Now, what we know about China is, you're not leaving China unless they want you to. So they know you're leaving. And they're allowing you to come to the United States of America. For what purpose? I don't think it's to come here and do all kinds of great things, you know, be on PBS or anything like that. And these are all military-age males, tens of thousands of them, and then they melt into the United States of America. Now, some of them may be, as it was, the elocution was, fine people. But if I were a member of Department of Homeland Security, I'd be freaked out about it. We know that Christopher Wray finally, ultimately said that he's a little bit freaked out about it, but consider the following. Just in the last few years, China has bought up 350,000 acres of American property, mostly farmland property, and most of it is located near critical infrastructure. Just so happens. Now, think about farmland in America, Kansas and places like that. You know, vast tracts of open land that are not anywhere near critical infrastructure, but these happen to have been purchased near critical infrastructure like dams, waterways, power plants, and, most importantly, military installations, primarily things such as missile bases. This is an extraordinary development, and we don't even know all of the acreage that they own because the Department of Agriculture has never kept track of this stuff. All we know is, just by review of available records, that they have bought up recently at least 350,000 acres. Now, they've been buying up land in South America and Africa, too. But in the last 10 years, they have increased their farmland purchases in the United States of America by 5,300%. And in my, you know, my math is not the best, but that's a lot. And a lot of things they're doing also is they're buying up fertilizer plants, food processing plants, distribution centers, chemical plants that are agricultural related. And again, it's a twofer. They're buying up agricultural property, which they're doing all over the world, by the way, and it's for purposes of, and they've said this, I mean, they actually say it, they want to control the worldwide distribution of food. China, by itself, they don't have the agricultural wherewithal that the United States or Canada has, so they've been buying up farmland that is arable all over the world. They want to control the world distribution of food because they are so benevolent. They're kind-hearted. They want to make sure that the poor have food to eat. I mean, this is the kind of lunacy that we're engaged in here. So I think it's important. The Biden administration, I don't know what they're doing about it. All I know is this is the same administration that no one has been held to account for the fact that the president did get, and his family did get, millions of dollars from China. That's irrefutable. We also know that Hunter Biden got a diamond that was worth I don't know how much. They're getting money in the most extraordinary. Again, those of us of a certain age, if you had told us this before the advent of the Biden administration, and definitely before the bias that was revealed by the press in the Trump years, we would have been astonished by this and thought that this is something that just can't happen. This is the stuff of movies. But now it's happening right under our nose. The news media yawns about it. China is doing everything they can to restrain the United States, to frankly supplant the United States, and they want to do it without having to fire a shot. And we are helping them do it. Many of the wealthy here, many of those that are connected, have sold their they don't sell their souls necessarily, but as long as they can continue to do business with China, they don't care about the strategic implications that are involved in that. And China is. They're laser focused on it until such time we wake up and we go like, hey, wait a minute, I thought we were number one in the world at some point. But we know that just like Gulliver, he wakes up and he's restrained by all these Lilliputians. Well, China's got about 1.4 billion Lilliputians, and so many of them are actively trying to restrain this. And I wish the Biden administration, and frankly, I wish that the elite, so-called elite class in the United States of America, would for a moment pause and say to themselves, the bounty that's been provided by this country is unimaginable. I want to make sure that we protect it and that we're vigilant against our adversaries. Unfortunately, our biggest adversary is eating our lunch with the help of many of our elites.
Peter, last thing on this. We keep hearing China's buying it up. Who's selling it? I mean, is this something that has to go through any kind of regulations as far as how much you're allowed to buy?
Yeah, there are some things. I can't speak for all of commerce. For example, certain things in the aerospace industry and certain other industries do have to pass certain types of musters, certain types of regulatory clearances. But as I say in the article, I was stunned by this, too. I did a little bit of research. The Department of Agriculture and other places, other things that you think might have some type of authority over sale of farmland, sale of any land, they're not involved at all. I mean, anyone can come in here and buy up land if they choose to do so. You've got very wealthy investors from all over the world, Saudis and others who do that. You know, they buy certain areas of land. But the Chinese are up here buying tons and tons of our land, again, near critical infrastructure. It's not out like in the middle of Kansas somewhere that's nowhere near military installations or anything else like that. They try to get, you know, two birds with one stone. That is, get the land, but also make sure that they have access to areas within hailing distance of strategic areas of strategic importance in the United States of America.
Yeah, it is extraordinarily important. And you know, you said, what is the Biden administration going to do about it? What is Congress going to do about it? Are there going to be any kind of regulations or anything that can be passed? I don't know, but I do know that this is extraordinarily dangerous given some of the facts that you just presented in the history of what communist parties do. This is what communist China wants to do. You just said it. And nobody talks about it in those terms. That's why we love having you on.
Yeah.
They want to control the world distribution of food. Ostensibly, it's always with the noble intention of making sure people who are underprivileged in oppressed countries with terrible climates and so forth have enough to eat. And it's like, well, that's a noble goal. But by taking, you know, reallocating wealth and reallocating food resources and so on and so forth, you essentially put yourself in control of the world, which is what communism strives for.
Yeah, exactly. And what's remarkable to me is they're telling us precisely what they're up to. They do want to supplant us, and they can do it without firing a shot. They have told us precisely what they're here to do. And our administration, I don't know everything that our government is doing, okay? Our government presumably does a lot of stuff to protect us that we would never hear about, and I'm hopeful that's the case because, my goodness, some of these things shouldn't be revealed in public. But by the same token, there are many things they could be doing that they could publicly reveal, and they're not doing them, and or they're not revealing them. It's really remarkable. And the most important thing is the bully pulpit. Very often, you can do major, if you have the most powerful military and economy in the world, if you stand up in your bully pulpit, if you're president of the United States or some cabinet officials and say certain things, you can move mountains. but they're not saying anything. They're not even acknowledging that this is a problem. And I'm very concerned that the opposition party is not doing much, other than, you know, a few of the usual suspects that we have to rely on, the Americans like Chip Roy and others, who are out there crying in the wind, and nobody apparently is listening to them. And it's going to be too late at a certain point, and I'm hopeful that we wake up soon.
Peter Kersenow with another sterling edition of Kersenow Commentary. Peter, we always appreciate you, my friend. Thank you so much for the great analysis, and we will talk to you next week.
Thank you, Bob.
Thank you, sir. 1057, Always Right Radio on AM 1420, The Answer. We got another hour to go. We will make that hour open for your phone calls at 216-901-0945, 888-281-1110. Anything we did in the 9 at 9, top 9 at 9, anything you just heard with Kersenow, and we've got new stories we haven't even touched on yet. Well, we'll take your calls on them. 216-901-0945. Stay here on Always Right Radio, AM 1420.
Ohio Association of Broadcasters and this station.
This hour of Always Right Radio is brought to you by The Floor King and KeepingMedicareSimple.com.
You and I know and do not believe that life is so dear and peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. If nothing in life is worth dying for, when did this begin? Just in the face of this enemy? Or should Moses have told the children of Israel to live in slavery under the Pharaohs? Should Christ have refused the cross? Should the patriots at Concord Bridge have thrown down their guns and refused to fire the shot heard round the world? The martyrs of history were not fools. And our honored dead, who gave their lives to stop the advance of the Nazis, didn't die in vain. Where then is the road to peace? Well, it's a simple answer after all. You and I have the courage to say to our enemies, there is a price we will not pay. There is a point beyond which they must not advance.
This is Always Right Radio with Bob France on AM 1420, The Answer.
Oh, yes, indeed. Hour number three is underway now. It's 8 minutes past 11 o'clock on this Tuesday, the ninth morning of the fourth month in the year of our Lord 2024. Thanks to Peter Kersenow. If you missed any of his brilliant analysis and observation of what is going on in the world around us right now, you can always catch it an hour after the show at whkradio.com on the podcast page. I always love people who listen, who make time for the program when they can listen to it. And if they can't listen to it live, they go find it. I have a lot of people who tell me they really appreciate that. So make sure you take advantage of that. It is a great opportunity to catch up on what you missed. All right, third hour is going to be wide open here. 216-901-0945, 888-281-1110. If you have an eclipse story to share, I suppose I'll take them, because maybe you can explain to me exactly how much this moved you. And I mean that in a very literal sense. I was talking to Pete about this at the very beginning, and he said he was really not expecting much, but it exceeded expectations. Okay. I might even agree with that. My whole thing was, it's so short. It's going to be really cool, and then the light is going to come back on again. And it's going to be like, okay, did that just happen? Yeah, I guess. And then we go on with our business. I was watching TV yesterday evening. I had to turn it off, by the way. There was my wife had local news on, and they were on like 13 minutes into the newscast, and they were still doing man on the street interviews about, what did you think of the eclipse? No, what did you think of the eclipse? Here's what I thought of the eclipse, and I thought the eclipse was, and it was, it's like, you know, it was too much. I ended up having to turn it on. I turned on a rerun of Seinfeld. So the people that they were talking to were literally, they were, I cried. And maybe you can help me understand it at a level deeper than I do. I was like, this is cool. I sat out there. I started to, actually, I was doing the trimming of my lawn first. It was around, I don't know, 250 or something like that. And my wife brought the chairs out and sat down, and she brought her little glasses out. And I was like, okay, so we'll sit down. And sure enough, you know, you put it on and you could start to see it doing its, you know, with the glasses, you could see it doing its little move across the sun. And then obviously as we got to the 310, 311, 312 mark or whatever it was out in Lorain County, you know, it started to get darker and darker and darker. And none of the, hey, Seth, help me out here. I know you were all over this. Because you told me beforehand you were all about this.
Yes.
Where did you go? What did you do?
I was at home in Broadview Heights.
And did you sit outside and watch the whole thing, or what'd you do?
I waited till about 3:07, and then I went outside, sat on the bumper of my car, and watched it.
Did you have the glasses?
I did.
Okay. Did you notice anything different with the wildlife? Birds chirping?
Okay.
Any of that stuff?
Look, I heard a lot of people say, no, I didn't hear anything. But I did. My dog was acting totally weird.
In what way?
In the sense that when it went out, and then I went back in pretty much as soon as the sun started peeking out again, she refused to get off the stairs. Like, usually when I walk in the door, she bounces right over to me and is like, hey, how you doing? And she would not get off the stairs. I kept calling for her, and for like 5 minutes, she would not move. She just sat there.
Okay, so nothing then.
Weird. It was weird for
it's her. It's not weird. It's a dog, and sometimes they sit still.
No.
But what we were told was going to happen was that the birds were either going to go dead silent because they're freaked out because it's dark now, or they were going to be chirping and squawking like crazy. And I literally read and heard two different things about that. We live near two ponds, and so there's a lot of geese and a lot of ducks that are almost always around there, and they fly overhead and honk, 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 honk through the day, and sometimes they don't. And literally, my wife and I were like waiting for all of the unique things to happen, and nothing unique happened. There were a few birds chirping. They didn't go excessively. There were a few geese honking. They didn't do it excessively. There wasn't silence where they all thought it's nighttime, be quiet now. It was just normalcy, except it got dark for a few minutes.
Well, I mean, I wasn't paying attention for birds and that kind of thing. But it was kind of interesting when the lights went on and, like, my street lights went on. And I thought it was a little weird that people were lighting off fireworks. It was a little strange.
Yeah, I know. I heard that, too. I heard that, too. I mean, but like I said, my thing was it was cool. I'm not denying that it was cool. It was pretty neat, especially when you put the glasses on and saw the actual movement. And then when you saw the final little sliver disappear and we had totality and... You know, and it was dark, and it was like, wow, looking around, it's like it's 3:20 or whatever, and it's dark, and it shouldn't be. It looks like it's about 7:20 right now, and okay, cool. Literally, no, not mockingly, literally, it's pretty cool. And then it started to get light again, and it was like very quickly as it had come, it was light again. I was like, all right, we're done now, and I went back to doing my yard work. That's my point. What I'm wondering is all these people are talking about how it was life-changing. It was moving. It was something. It was an experience they'll never forget. And I'm trying to figure out, what am I missing?
Well, did you see social media was the best afterwards? Because all of a sudden, everybody's posting the same picture of the sun.
Yes!
Even like friends like of ours, like Charlie Kalani, love the guy. But he's sitting there, I had a camera with 14 different lenses and used cardboard this, and I'm like, dude, it looks like every other picture I saw.
Oh my gosh, yes, I did. The same exact thing. Everybody has it posted. Now, I will say, if you look at my social media, I have a better version of it than everybody else had, I think, because I don't know. I mean, I set my mind to it, and I wanted to make sure that everybody got to see the very best view of the full moon blocking out the sun in totality. It was pretty unique. So I put that on my Facebook page. You can check it out right now. It's at Always Right Radio on my Facebook page. And I just added it to my Twitter feed seconds ago, actually, as well. So you can take a look at it. It's Seth, look at it now. It's better than Charlie's. It's probably better, and it's certainly different than anybody else's because they didn't have the certain lens that I had to see. But go ahead and take a look at it now, and we'll get your reaction to it live and on the air. And Marianne, too, if you want to pull it up, you follow me on Twitter, too. And on Facebook. That I think is the best, most complete view that we have seen yet of the full eclipse.
Yes, it is.
Yes?
Look at that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You see, now I get it. You know, you're making fun of everybody posting the same picture and including Charlie, and you're right. But this one is
it's definitely the movie.
I guess Marianne liked it. It's Yeah, that is indeed the full moon blocking the sun in totality, and it's a cool image. I mean, but like I said, it's also not life changing. It's also not worth crying over. And I certainly, you know, what I was willing to do to see it, what I did, which is walk into my driveway. I was not willing to drive a half an hour up to Avon Lake to see it better. I certainly wasn't willing to drive five states away like some people did. You heard what Kirsenow said. He said he saw cars in downtown Cleveland with plates from Oklahoma, from Maryland, from Iowa, all these different places. Everybody's driving to see this thing. I'm not going much further than my driveway. I might have walked to the street. Maybe if I had to get a view, better view of it at the street, I might have walked there. That would have been the extent. So I don't know. I don't know what I was missing there, but that's just the way that I felt about it.
Your moon is actually more life-changing than the one that happened.
It might be. I don't know. It's a better picture. It's much more clear. We did get a clear day.
Yes.
Yes, it's a very clear day. The sky is blue as can be, you know, white clouds all around it, and it's a very clear view of the moon and the sun. Excuse me. So, yeah, it is probably more clear than others, but like I said, I had a really special lens, so... Anyway, you can check that out if you would like. 216-901-0945, 888-281-1110. You can tell us your eclipse emotions yesterday if you feel like it. Todd in Ward 1 wants to talk about Dawn Staley, though, and I'm cool with that, too, because that story is a very, very interesting one to me. Hey, Todd, what's happening?
Yo, Bob, I wanted to address two things that Peter brought up. Dawn being one of them. I'm familiar with the matter. Dawn's an employee. Man, and she was limited on to what degree she could really give out her personal feelings on that matter and not cause unnecessary disruption with her employment. If her employee says that you have to coach these women, then Dawn has to coach these women. Had they pushed her a little bit further, she may have told them, I don't accept that, but, you know, and this is why I keep going back to we should, it's not a derogatory term to just say gender masking. What these people should really want more so than anything is to be treated fairly in society as they meet the responsibility of treating society fairly and accepting that they've only mastered gender and nothing more if they've gone through that process so we could get rid of the term transgender. I don't want a bunch of dudes coming to trial for South Carolina this year, and she doesn't want a bunch of dudes coming to trial for South Carolina either. Trust me on that one. But
well, fairness has nothing to do with it, though, Todd, because, you know, as you probably have seen and heard, you know, they will not be happy until you say the things they want you to say. And it's not about, hey, we want to be treated fairly. You have to celebrate us as being what we say we are.
Which is wrong.
It's some people will say, and I'm one of them that say, hey, look, you know, if you want to play pretend with what you are, that's a you decision. Go ahead.
Right.
If you want me to play pretend along with you, no. That's a me decision. I don't have to play if I don't want to, and I'm not playing your game. That's not acceptable to them. You can treat them fairly. They can have their jobs. They can do whatever, but that's not enough. If you're not a part of celebrating what they say that they are and affirming it, so that they feel better about it, they want your job. They want to cancel you. They want to, ostracize you and so on and so forth. And that's the problem. And for Dawn Staley, Todd, you know, I don't know if you heard us yesterday, but, I would have answered a very, very different way. If she did not want to offend the LGBTQ community, because maybe, like I said to Peter, she's a part of a marginalized community herself as a black female, you know, if that's how she feels anyway, you know, okay. But she didn't have to affirm that either. She could have very well said, we are in Cleveland at the Final Four. We are playing for the national championship tomorrow. You can ask me about South Carolina basketball or Iowa basketball or what it's going to be like to play Caitlin Clark or anything else about the experience here, and you're bringing up social issues. That's not what we're here to talk about. She could have just completely diffused the situation and made that reporter sound stupid and say, ask me about basketball. And she didn't. She did her little hum, I don't know, okay, if women want to play, everybody who thinks they're a woman can play. She really could have just diffused the whole thing, and she didn't.
She wasn't prepared. She'll talk
about it. No, she was not. Totally not prepared. I mean, who would be? It was a gotcha question from the Outkick reporter. And, you know, I mean, he really did set her up pretty good. She totally was not ready for that.
She talks about social issues separate from basketball openly. She just wasn't prepared for that one. But the thing that Peter brought up that caught my attention the most, because this is the fifth time I've heard it from somebody credible, Peter being the fifth one. Mm-hmm. When I get off the air with you today, I want to look into that, because they shouldn't have a lot of farmland in the possession of Chinese. that are close to our military compounds or our military missile bases or anything like that.
Right.
Because of our economic competition with them, and more so than that, now I'm not going to say more so than that, we do need to have our healthy farmlands maintained within the confines of our people, because the population of the world is getting larger, the demand on crops is getting stronger, and we have to be able to, you know, use different portions of the farmlands while the other portions of the farmlands are recovering from our usage of growing other crops. So as soon as I get off the phone, because I got time today, I want to look into that some more, because that's probably the most serious thing that Peter brought up to me. What are we going to do without our healthy food supply? And what are we going to do if we're giving our healthy food supply to our greatest competitor?
You're right about both. They're both major factors in this. The fact that they are, you know, going to try to impact our food supply, if not outright control it, and then also the strategic locations near the bases there. Remember, this is the same country that sent that spy balloon across the entire continental United States to traverse the entire country slowly at its own leisure, and Joe Biden didn't order it shot down until it got over the ocean and completed its job. I am not convinced, Todd, and this may be conspiratorial to some, I'm not convinced that Joe Biden isn't working with Xi Jinping along with the other globalists to literally take the United States as the world leader economically and militarily and so forth down to the point where it is just falling in line with the rest of what is going to be a global order. I cannot figure out for the life of me why he and they would not do something about the farmland purchase and why they would not do anything about that about that spy balloon.
I'm against farmland and any other properties owned by foreign major competitors anywhere near the proximity of military bases. I don't care what the property is. You can't own it within a certain amount of distance, because those are our military bases and other things that are connected to the protection of the common good. So I'm about to get off the phone and look into this.
Brother.
That's serious, man.
Check into it, man, and call me back anytime about it. Thank you, Todd. Yeah. I appreciate it. What Peter wrote, by the way, for the National Review article, and he talked about it too, but just to repeat it, Chinese purchases of American agricultural land increased 5,300% between 2010 and 2020. And its rate of expansion is accelerating. China now controls an estimated 350,000 acres of American farmland, specific to that farmland. That's not just 350,000 acres of land, and maybe it's, you know, urban communities. No, farmland, where our food grows. And alarmingly, Peter wrote, the Department of Agriculture does not maintain a reliable tracking system, so the precise extent of Chinese ownership of that farmland is unknown. But then he also pointed out that the government has been buying fertilizer companies, food processing facilities, distribution networks, chemical companies at a very, very alarming rate. They want all of our farmland. Then they want the control of the means of distribution of that food that is grown. And we're sitting here watching it going, la, 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 la. If you're not alarmed by this, I mean, honestly, I don't know what it's going to take. Not every attack on the United States is going to involve, you know, jets and towers. Not every attack on the United States is going to involve bombs or invasions, armed invasions anyway, other than the one that's being allowed across the southern border right now, but military invasions. You know, a lot of this stuff is going to happen because of our lax rules and regulations. Don is in Lakewood. Hey, Don, you're on AM 1420, The Answer. Fire away.
Okay, Bob. So eclipse matters.
Yes.
Yes, I saw.
You were fired up. You were fired up about this. I saw your Facebook.
I'm sort of, I just saw your posting, and that's an incredible image. And
yeah, isn't
Lakewood, it? It'd be very popular. Is that a self-portrait by any chance? I wonder.
No. I just aimed at my camera at the moon and the sun, and one was in front of the other, just like everybody else. There it is.
Yeah, interesting image. Anyway, I'm a photographer, videographer, and I went down my wife and I went down to Lakewood Park, and it was you know, everybody out with their chairs and out with their picnic stuff and people with telescopes and whatnot. It was very quiet. And I'm like, okay, I set my stuff up, and I'm going, okay, where's the fireworks? You know, it was like usually you get a crowd like that, and it's a big deal with a lot of booms. And I'm shooting the crowd as it starts to dim, and I'm watching it. And I have my back to the sun, and I'm shooting, and all of a sudden when it gets dark, and everybody goes, whoa, and everybody starts cheering. And I turned around to look at what was happening, and I just said, oh, my God. And I just almost dropped my camera. And I'm looking at it, and I'm like trying to concentrate. I go back to the camera, and I start shooting. Mm-hmm. And I think what this, in essence, ended up being is a sociological event. I think there's more to it than just, you know, 3 minutes of darkness. Because I think people in Lakewood, and I saw it happen, and I was involved too, people in Lakewood who normally would never even speak to each other were getting together and discussing what we had just seen and been through. So yeah, I'm interested to hear what Dr. Piper will have to say about this, because in essence, it's kind of a reminder from God how small we are and how insignificant we could be with all our petty squabbles, etc. And I know that's kind of an idealistic standpoint on it, but it was a definite sociological, and there's a lot of silly stuff going on. I mean, the people going over the top, but from my standpoint, it was visually one of the most incredible things I've ever seen. And I've seen a lot of, you know, I shoot some astronomy stuff and various things, but it was impressive for that small period of time. Everybody, it sounds corny, but they sort of all united in this communal experience. And I was fairly surprised. And so it was a pretty big deal. I take it for what it is. I'm pretty pragmatic about it. But it was pretty impressive. So that's my take. Anyway.
Okay. Well, I appreciate it. That's what I'm asking for, Don, and I appreciate yours. Thank you very much for that. And especially if you are a person who's interested in astronomy to the extent, and you just said that you were even a little bit, that was probably much, much bigger for others. I fall short of the it's a sign from God or a reminder from God or what have you. A lot of people have said that, and it's interesting that you want to hear from Dr. Piper on that. I know God. I know who God is. I know my place in his world and in his universe, and I know it is infinitesimally small. I didn't need to see the natural rotation and orbit of Earth, Moon, and Sun lining up to create that thing to know that. That's just me. I didn't get anything religious out of it. I just thought, pretty cool. It lined up, it made it dark for a minute, and now it's going to keep on moving through, and it's not going to come to that exact same place again in another, 70 years or whatever the heck it is. I didn't take anything religious from it. I just thought it was kind of cool. But then again, maybe I'm seeing it wrong. That's the reason I'm asking for other viewpoints. 11:30, timeout, quick timeout, right back.
And the answer.
All right, 11:36. We got time for a few more phone calls here before the end of the broadcast. I'll almost say the top of the hour, but obviously we asked Bill O'Reilly to take it to the top of the hour from 11:45 up. Let's go to Charlie, the politically incorrect mechanic in Lakewood, the guy that is the bane of the existence of the mayor of that city because he won't let anybody else park in the city, according to what she says. Hey, Charlie, what's up, sir?
What did I do to you guys?
What do you mean?
What is this? I got nothing better to do. I'm trying to work on these poor people's cars and get cars fixed so I can get them out of here and keep business moving. I got to stop what I'm doing. I got to defend myself because I'm getting called out on a somewhat national radio show in the middle of the day here because I decided to be nice and put up the settings that it took me 20 minutes to screw around with to show everybody how I took the pictures that I was able to take half decent on my cell phone. What is this garbage, huh? You guys got nothing to do but to make a poor guy feel bad and have to stop working to defend himself?
All I know is I'm scrolling your Facebook page right now. Not one, not two, not three, but four different pictures of the freaking moon and the sun. And you've got it.
Stages.
Hold on. You're complaining that it's taking time away from your job to call us. How much time did it take for you to tell everybody that you used a Galaxy S10 in Pro Mode with 10x zoom, WB at 10,000K, speed 1/60th, ISO 50, and that you sacrificed a pair of cardboard glasses for a light filter? So how much time did it take you to do all of that?
It took me about, once I figured it out, it took me about once every 15 or 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Of going out there, snapping a picture, going back to work.
So do you feel good about yourself now?
I feel excellent about myself.
Yeah. Everybody posted the same damn pictures. I read somebody on Facebook yesterday that said, this morning, I know there are a million of these pictures out there, but this one is mine. I was immediately reminded of Full Metal Jacket. This is my rifle. There are many others like
That's
it, but
right.
this one is mine. And like, oh, good for
That's
you.
Right.
Hey, Charlie, those ones are yours.
On the event and everything. I won't take it as far as Don did, as far as, religious aspect and everything.
Oh, great. Now you're going to make Don call us up to defend himself. Now you're doing it.
No, he won't call you. He'll call me. I'm sure I'm already getting text messages. But anyways, I won't go that far, but I do think that it was a cool thing. It's not supposed to ever pass over Cleveland for another 375 years, I think, something like that. So it was cool to see something like that.
I agree. It was cool.
For it.
Yeah.
Hold on, Charlie.
Where did you take your pictures? You told us how you took them. Where did you take them?
Just right in front of the garage door of the shop.
Okay, so you didn't have to go anywhere. Would you have gone
for this
event? Would you have traveled to go
Hell
see
no.
it? No.
No.
Okay.
Not in a million years.
Okay, I'm sorry. Continue.
That's why I say it. That's my point of view of it, is that, it happened right over us. So, take some time and enjoy the moment and whatnot. But also along the lines of what Don said about, people talking to each other that normally wouldn't look sideways at each other. I find it funny that we were able to come together for something like this, but not Epstein's client list.
That's very true. That's very true. A little priorities here, people. But yeah,
that's
no,
right.
that's the whole point I'm making. And thank you, Charlie. Appreciate your call. Thanks for defending yourself, buddy. Appreciate the laugh, too. All I'm saying is I could see it from where I was. And so I was like, this is cool. If I would have had to drive to Westlake, no, not doing it. If it would have been visible from Westlake but not from where I live, I wouldn't have done it. It wasn't going to be that important to me. It didn't see it as being, like I said, religious particularly. It didn't see it as being some sort of a sign or anything other than just, hey, wow, look at that. It's 3 o'clock in the afternoon and it's dark out. And then 5 minutes later, hey, guess what? It's 3 o'clock in the afternoon and it's light out again. Let's get back to what we're doing here. I didn't think it was worth all of the drama. That's just my opinion again. Let's see what Diane's opinion is in West Park. Diane, go right ahead.
Hi, Bob. Thank you. I do have a different opinion, I guess, or at least to a degree. I sat out on my balcony for 2 hours. I stuck those protective lenses on, and I hardly looked away. So I saw all the phases, and that in itself was cool. And then it was fun to take off the protective eyewear and see the moon. I just thought it was awesome, and I even surprised myself because when I first heard about it, I was like, yeah, it's no big deal. But then I realized the importance of it was that we were it as Clevelanders in Northeast Ohio. We were in it the past. So that made it kind of a necessity for me. After, I'm 20 feet away from the trees in the valley, so the birds did quiet down, and the few that were doing anything were kind of giving out kind of plaintive sounds. And there just wasn't much, but other than that, it was so bright for the whole totality of it, except for those 3 or 4 minutes. So,
well, you know what? There's a couple of, and thank you for that, your experience there, Diane. I appreciate it. Two things didn't happen that were supposed to happen. One was, again, that the wildlife was supposed to change its behavior. And depending on who you listen to, the birds, were supposed to get silent, and dogs, birds were supposed to get silent because it's dark now and they're confused, and they, and, you know, they don't usually make a lot of noise in the dark. That's why they chirp at sunup. They were supposed to get silent, or they were going to be so confused they're going to be squawking like crazy because it's dark out and it shouldn't be right now, and they know it, and their body clocks are saying what they're saying above it. So they're either supposed to be really loud or super quiet, and they didn't. It was just the same normal sound before the eclipse actually moved into place. It was the same sound during it. It was the same sound after it. And the other part is that dogs were supposed to freak out. Keep your dogs in the house, everybody. Put them in the basement. Put blinders on the blinds on the windows. Make sure that they can't see out because they're going to get flipped. None of those things happened. None of those things happened. The second thing that didn't happen was the traffic. My son was home for the weekend. We talked him into leaving and going back to school before the eclipse because the traffic, according to every service that was out there, was supposed to be 5 to 6 times longer than it would normally allow. He's 2 hours away from school. We didn't want him trying to fight past Cleveland. First of all, there's between all of the events out downtown for the eclipse and then the Indians home opener. We did not want him to have to try to get past up.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.